All year long, the Alabama Public Radio News team has been investigating human trafficking in our state. One way to put trafficking in focus in Alabama is by looking at the numbers. Today, APR's Pat Duggins looks at one figure and what it means. And a note to our listeners, this story contains content of an adult nature that might not be suitable for all ages.
But the fact is that, unfortunately, there is a prevalence of human trafficking throughout the entire state.
That's Christian Lim. He's leading a project at the University of Alabama's College of Social Work on human trafficking in the state. His team spent 2017 conducting interviews around Alabama to get a snapshot of how many suspected victims of trafficking ask for help from the police or social service agencies. Lim says the final number was nearly 1,200. And that's not the disquieting part.
Yeah, clearly whatever we're recovering is a smaller percentage of what's happening.
So small, Lim says, that some estimates put the real figure at 10 times higher. If that's true, then the total could be closer to 12,000, just in Alabama, just in 2017. Lim says the point is that authorities know what they know, but that's it.
So if you flip that on its head, what that means is there's a lot of professionals in our state that are running across victims of human trafficking, but not identifying it and seeing them as victims of human trafficking.
But the College of Social Work found another number that could give an even clearer picture of trafficking in Alabama. It's based on when traffickers come out in the open and advertise on the internet. 2 years ago, the college counted those ads, and the total was 641,000. Just in Alabama, just in 2017.
The biggest problem with getting a realistic number is the people who are most likely to encounter this activity are the participants.
That's Gary Warner. He's a computer analyst in Birmingham. He's referring specifically to the buyers and sellers of sex trafficking in Alabama, better known as the Johns and the Pimps.
And both of them are, you know, not likely to report the situation.
At least not voluntarily, and that's where Warner comes in. If you look at trafficking like a business, you have sellers, you have buyers, and you have merchandise, which in this case happens to be people. Warner spends his workday going to where the deals are made.
If we go down further, it says, "Hey, Daddy, if you're looking for," and that's about all we are able to say about this ad on the radio. But if you want to have a great time, contact me, and it lists the telephone number again.
Warner sits in front of a large computer screen. It's cluttered with online ads in Birmingham featuring pictures of young women. Some are unclothed. Others are performing sex acts. And many of these messages get specific.
And in this case, you know, she describes many different sex acts she'll perform. And then the prices go as low as $10 for these services, up to $100 if you want her to spend the night with you.
The ads on Warner's computer screen are basic. No flashy videos or graphics, just a photo and a price list. None of these ads gives details on what this person may be going through.
I was forced to stay in a hotel room. So I basically lived in a box for a year.
That's Dixie Shannon. She lives in central Alabama. Shannon isn't in any of the sex ads on Warner's computer screen, but the experience she shared with APR showed what it was like to be trafficked. Shannon says it didn't start with Johns with handfuls of cash. Her trafficker had a process first. It's referred to as grooming.
There was many episodes where, you know, like he would test me many times and then he would use different forms of punishment. He would break me down until I was nothing. And then he would build me a little bit from that. And then break me down again and keep rebuilding me and breaking me down.
Part of Shannon's grooming process was on how to use internet sex ads to drum up business. She was trafficked twice. First, when Shannon was 17, then again in her mid-20s as she was going through a divorce. Gary Warner isn't alone when it comes to studying sex trafficking ads in Alabama. Outside his office, there's a workroom where analysts sit hunched over their own PCs. One of them arrived late. She had a test in Western Civilizations class. This is the Computer Forensics Research Lab at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. Warner's the director. Outside the lab, other UAB students prepare for their next classes. Inside the lab, Warner's crew works to dredge the seamy underbelly of the internet. Technically, their main client is Facebook, but Warner and his team aren't looking for irritating pop-up ads.
So we do this in the area of terrorism, in opioid and fentanyl trafficking, and we were doing this also in the area of sex trafficking for Facebook.
When it comes to sex trafficking in Alabama, Warner says Alabamians are more likely to use the web to arrange hookups, particularly in larger cities like Mobile, Birmingham, and Huntsville.
I think so, and largely because we don't have the same organized crime structure as some of the larger cities.
And that makes them easier to track. Warner and his team picks a day at random and then uses their computer tools to look at the commercial sex trade in Birmingham, Mobile, Montgomery, and Huntsville.
In Birmingham, we had 251 ads. In Mobile, we had 114. In Huntsville, we had 106. And in Montgomery, we had 89, which is about 550 ads, roughly, for a single day in four major cities in Alabama, 550 distinctly different advertisements.
The FBI says a young person in the sex trade is considered a trafficking victim. Adults, however, have to be forced into it through coercion, fraud, or deception. None of the women pictured in the ads Gary Warner showed us appear afraid. He says they don't need to.
There may be some people that are doing it for kicks and money, but usually there's some form of abuse or harm in the past that's caused them to gravitate towards this line of work.
National studies put the average starting age of a sex trafficking victim in the U.S. at between 11 and 15 years old. There, law enforcement says, the notion of choice doesn't enter into it. Pat Duggins, APR News, in Birmingham.
For the past year, the Alabama Public Radio News team has been investigating human trafficking in our state. For many victims, the trafficker starts off as a stranger. APR's Pat Duggins reports on another type in Alabama, one that occurs all in the family. And a note to our listeners, this story contains content of an adult nature that might not be suitable for all ages.
Okay, if you will tell them to, we're going to get more food out.
300 people are crowding a packed ballroom at the Embassy Suites in Montgomery, and there's more at issue today than just keeping the coffee pots full. Some in the audience carry badges and have guns on their hips. Others are in business attire, while still more are dressed casually.
Good morning. Can I have your attention, please? We want to go ahead and get started. It's 9 o'clock on the dot.
Today is the 5th annual Alabama Human Trafficking Summit, and everyone in the audience works on some aspect of the subject. The list of speakers includes pretty much something for everyone. That doesn't keep one participant from bringing up one issue on her own.
So I think probably we have more familial trafficking.
That's Teresa Collier. She's with the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency, also known as ALEA. She's considered to be the state's point person on human trafficking. Collier works for ALEA's Fusion Center, which deals in intelligence. That means she spends a lot of time interacting with federal and local law enforcement. Collier also does lots of interviews in the field with victims of human trafficking in Alabama, and she says she's noticed a pattern.
You might have a mom that, the only way she can keep her house or her wherever she's staying is to let her landlord have access, sexual access to her kid. That sort of thing happens quite a bit.
In other words, familial trafficking.
The abuse started for me with him just before my first birthday.
Kelly Dorr is a survivor.
And then it transpired when I was about 2.5 to 3, where he was allowing other people to abuse me.
Teresa Collier says she's concerned familial trafficking in Alabama isn't just an issue. It could very well be the issue.
The only reason I say that I feel like there's as much familial pimping is just because of my role as a forensic interviewer, and I know what I have seen.
So I'd say that's likely, of course.
That's Wendy Bradford. She lives in Jackson, Mississippi. Bradford's support of Teresa Collier's position comes with a condition, and it's a big one.
It wouldn't surprise me, but I would probably say what everyone else said to me before we started the project. You've got to have the numbers.
Collier says the project Bradford is referring to is why she considers Mississippi to be pretty much the gold standard when it comes to measuring familial trafficking.
Basically, they took 4 counties in rural Mississippi and they surveyed the Children's Advocacy Centers and other victim service providers just to find out what is the most common type of trafficking you're seeing here, and it was familial.
So we hit the road for Jackson, Mississippi to meet with Bradford.
I was the liaison of the project. I was one of the authors of the project, one of the editors of the project.
The human trafficking group Shared Hope teamed up with Belhaven University. Bradford founded the support group Beautiful Ones Ministry, which also took part. 36 interviews were conducted in the four counties surrounding Jackson. Bradford says prosecutors were invited to talk, along with judges, service providers, law enforcement, and governmental agencies.
And so nobody really, really knew what the problem was. Most people were like, oh, we don't have that here, like most other states or in small towns. Oh, we don't have that here.
But the study said otherwise. Familial trafficking was identified during interviews as the most common form of exploitation, more than gang-related, run-of-the-mill pimp activity, or survival sex. That's where minors sell sexual favors for either food or drugs. Bradford says a lack of education was one common factor leading to familial trafficking, but there was one more.
I knew that poverty obviously is an issue in Mississippi. It's an issue just about anywhere in any state that you have. We just happen to be at the bottom end of the barrel. And that's not a very popular answer, but it's true. It's just true.
But how does all of this figure into potential familial trafficking in Alabama? Bradford agrees that Alabama and Mississippi look a lot alike in terms of rural population, poverty, and a lack of education. All of these elements were pointed out in Mississippi's report as factors related to familial trafficking, but Bradford says that's not enough.
Unless someone is willing to pick up the torch and do the research and go through some type of thing like we went through and say, okay, so, hey guys, here are our statistics in Alabama. They told me we weren't going to move forward unless we had statistics, that we were not going to get support.
Back at the Human Trafficking Summit in Montgomery, Teresa Collier is getting ready to attend a few more talks before her afternoon breakout session on law enforcement. Once she wraps up here, it's back to her regular job and the tough sell she says she's been experiencing on familial trafficking.
I tell law enforcement and also the DAs, hey, this is a trafficking case, and whether they want to pursue that or not, most of the time they don't, because it's just easier to do a lesser type of charge, you know, just like a sex abuse or something like that. It's just easier for them.
And both the tough sell and the tough audience that goes with it shows no apparent signs of changing, at least not yet. Pat Duggins, APR News, in Montgomery.
All year long, the Alabama Public Radio News team has been investigating human trafficking in our state. So far, we've heard from cyber sleuths who count up sex trafficking ads in Alabama and how adults who traffic younger family members is a key concern in the state. Today, APR's Pat Duggins reports on one effort to do something about it. It's a project that uses the internet to coordinate efforts to help survivors and to change mindsets among people who work with trafficking victims.
Just a few little things. On the takedowns, let's go easy. I mean, we got to go in there fast and surprise.
Sergeant Trent Kempster is with the Tuscaloosa Police Department. He's briefing a roomful of about 30 law officers.
I'm not saying don't go in, go in there easy like a baby. I'm saying go in there fast, quick, but let's watch what we say and how we say it.
No one tonight is in uniform. The male officers are mostly in jeans and sneakers. Some are in T-shirts bearing the logos of sports teams, except for one. His has the Star Wars character Boba Fett on it. They all make up the West Alabama Human Trafficking Task Force, and tonight they're going hunting. After the briefing at Tuscaloosa PD, everyone moves to a local motel. We won't say where, since this is an all-night undercover sting operation. An estimated 75% of the sex workers arrested in Tuscaloosa show signs of being trafficked. The task force is about to net its first suspect of the night. One of the female officers is alone in a motel room as a potential John arrives to talk price. Four more members of the task force are standing outside the back door to the room. The handcuffs go on and the first suspect is ushered out for booking. One observer for tonight's sting is Christian Lim. He's leading a human trafficking project at the University of Alabama's College of Social Work. He says he has something in mind that could be a new tool to aid both victims of trafficking and the people who try to help them.
The best practice and what I've seen actually work is when they're sitting down at the table along with law enforcement, along with mental health, along with, you know, probation and other people working together to find a solution for this victim.
Christian Lim and his team are designing what's called the first ever internet database meant to be used by everyone involved with trafficking victims. That includes law enforcement, social service groups, and the victims. But Lim admits the database is the easy part. It's changing mindsets that gets tricky.
Yeah, it's a huge shift. And not just for law enforcement. It's a big shift for all of the partners involved.
Here's what Lim means by a big shift.
The shift is really understanding that your role is important and is essential, but so is the role of the person that I had previously been viewing as my adversary.
But the notion of law enforcement working hand in glove with social workers has its supporters.
We can't do what we do without law enforcement. We can do probably about a quarter of it.
That's Crystal Yarbrough. She lives in Mobile. Yarbrough runs a shelter for people in the sex trade along the Gulf Coast, and she knows about the distrust between social workers and police.
A lot of times service providers are so victim-centered that they tend to be anti-law enforcement. Sometimes law enforcement is so law enforcement that they tend to be anti-victim services.
Yarbrough sees this world from an undercover operation of her own. Not far from downtown Mobile, we won't say how far, is a small house in a quiet neighborhood. We won't say which one. It's called the Rose Center.
It's just a place for them to come, put their clothes in. We don't know when the last time they were able to wash and dry their clothes.
Yarbrough is already a believer in the idea of changing mindsets among law enforcement and caregivers when it comes to helping victims of sex trafficking. But not just so cops and social workers get along. Yarbrough says the victims benefit too.
They need to know that because they have been really manipulated to believe that law enforcement is against them, that they tend, you know, to already have that mindset. We want to change that mindset because we are all a community.
Back at the sting operation in Tuscaloosa, the arrests are trickling in. Without naming names, the list includes college-aged young people, one member of the military, and a trucker who left his 18-wheeler idling in the parking lot while he allegedly dropped in to buy sex. For Christian Lim, the next step is rolling out the University of Alabama's shared trafficking database. He says the goal is to make sure trafficking victims don't get lost in the cracks.
And so you have a system now that's working together to actually truly find justice and truly help this person towards restoration, as opposed to, in the case of a defense attorney and a prosecuting attorney, a couple professionals that are looking to win a case.
And perhaps changing more mindsets one at a time. Pat Duggins, APR News, in Tuscaloosa. For the past 14 months, the Alabama Public Radio News team has been investigating human trafficking in our state. APR student reporter Tina Turner reports on another side of the issue in Alabama that appears to be getting less attention.
You know, I can feel every thump that went across his body, you know.
Billy Jack Gaither was finally dead.
About half a dozen students are gathered at Auburn University's campus in Montgomery. They're watching the documentary, Assault on Gay America. It tells the story of how Billy Jack Gaither of Alabama was beaten to death with an axe handle. The message is, in Alabama, violence against gay people is not a hate crime.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And Gaither's death appears far from forgotten.
Wonderful to see you all here this beautiful afternoon in Montgomery.
The crowd was bigger for this talk at the Alabama Capitol. Auburn professor Dr. Paul Hard organized today's 20th annual vigil for hate crime and violence. It was inspired by Gaither's murder.
If you're grateful for the nice weather and in spite of everything they were telling us, would you just say yes?
Yeah!
All right.
On one side of Dr. Hard is the flag of Alabama. On the other is the Rainbow Gay Pride flag. Despite his comments about the weather, the event and the documentary screening carry the same serious message. In Alabama, violence against gay people is not a hate crime. And Hard wasn't the only person who wanted to talk about it.
Today, I'm truly honored to be here at this event.
That's Darrenisha Duncan Boyd, a transgender woman of color. She's the CEO of a group called Alabama's Take that stands for Transgender Advocates, Knowledge, and Empowering.
I had to come in honor of 20 years for this visual, but this is the best place to be at. Because oftentimes we know that trans women of color don't have a voice in the race.
Taking your money and doing what they want to do with you and all that other stuff.
So. We sat down with Boyd at TAKE headquarters in Birmingham, where the agenda is a little different. TAKE helps trans women of color, including those who work in the sex trade. That is something Darrenisha knows about.
Oh, girl, I was inside my house, and the first person, believe it or not, it was a lawyer.
Boyd performed sex acts for money. This is where Boyd begins to address the issue of gay and transgender trafficking. For many teenagers, it starts with running away from home, typically over arguments with their parents. Boyd says being gay, on top of being a teenager, can complicate things.
A lot of youth are forced out of their homes, especially here, conservative, Angelica Christians and all that stuff in the red states or whatever. So if you're pushed out of the house from your family, you don't have support or whatever.
The human trafficking support group Polaris says 40% of homeless youths in the U.S. identify as LGBTQ. The FBI says if someone sells a minor for commercial sex, the law considers that young person to be a victim of trafficking. Homelessness is considered a key factor for young people who end up being trafficked. And Darrenisha isn't the only one trying to do something about it.
Like me, I was sold to both males and females. So, you know, I had to make a choice.
Lynn Caffrey lives in Huntsville, and she's a survivor of human trafficking.
You know, so whenever I got my life changed, do I want to be straight? Do I want to be gay? You know, so you have to really learn who you really are. And in a lot of ways, sometimes they don't know who they are when they're that young. All right, this is our dining room. Now, at one point, now this is, we've leveled all the floors.
And in the Huntsville area, a lot of these young people come here.
So we had to level it to make it handicap accessible. This wasn't here. There was a door here.
Safe Harbor Youth is a transitional living program for runaways who are homeless, living on the streets, or victims of human trafficking. Caffrey is the executive director, and her clients run from 16 to 22 years old.
Most of our kids identify as bisexual, and that's because they've been sold to this person or that person, males and females, so they really don't know what their gender is.
Caffrey says teens who identify as transgender might have it the toughest when it comes to acceptance, particularly at home.
Especially the ladies that experience substance abuse, they basically, you know, they settle for this condition and not knowing that it's very toxic and it's dangerous.
Back at TAKE's office in Birmingham, Darrenisha talks about the constant struggle to keep at-risk clients who also happen to be gay or transgender from falling in the trap of being trafficked. For Boyd, the story of one girl she knew comes to mind. She was 15 years old, pushed out of her home, who took up with a man in his 40s just to survive. Boyd says it doesn't take much for a situation like that to go very badly.
It's a risky business and it's very dangerous because you don't know if your next John will be, you know, the person that will kill you.
For APR News, I'm Tina Turner in Birmingham.
All year long, the Alabama Public Radio News team has been investigating human trafficking throughout the state. Another major part of human trafficking is labor, where over 60% of the victims are foreign nationals. APR's Stan Ingold takes a look at this side of the problem and what the state is doing to combat it.
For me, really, the message that I want you all to take back to think about this, you're dealing with humans. These are human beings. It could be.
Evelyn Chumbau is from Cameroon. She's also a survivor of labor trafficking.
Being a victim at such a young age, I have trauma, but think about that. It can be your child. It can be your sister. So,
Chumbau told this panel of U.S. senators how she was brought to the United States from Africa. She expected to go to college. What Chumbau says she got was a life of slave labor. And before you ask, the state says it's happening here in Alabama.
We have children doing the job of an adult, and they don't have that level of safety that an adult would have.
Robin Wilburn is the Child Labor Inspector Supervisor for the Alabama Department of Labor. She's also a new member of the Alabama Human Trafficking Task Force. Wilburn says many undocumented children are forced into jobs upon arriving in the U.S.
And they're also doing jobs that you're long hours on their feet, cold conditions or very hot conditions. It just depends on what job they have.
Many of these children are working in meat processing plants, agriculture, and construction. Most are coming from Central America, Guatemala in particular. Wilburn says they first have to find false IDs to get these jobs.
One of my young girls that was working at the meat processing plant, she was fired after 2 days because somebody else was already using that name and Social Security number.
And when her bosses found out,
they told her to get new papers and come back.
State Attorney General says four North Alabama massage parlors were fronts for human trafficking.
State raids on massage businesses in Huntsville made the news earlier this year, including this report on WAAY-TV.
Way 31's Sydney Martin has been digging through the court documents all day, getting reaction, in fact, from local businesses.
These are industries where sex trafficking and labor trafficking often overlap, just not clearly.
Labor trafficking is not necessarily sex trafficking. Sex trafficking is always labor trafficking.
Doug Gilmer is the resident agent in charge of Homeland Security investigations for the Birmingham Field Office. He says when it comes to breaking the two down, you must look at them individually. Here's step one.
Labor trafficking is another form of human trafficking, and labor trafficking is very similar in that it's the use of fraud, force, or coercion to employ, harbor, transport, otherwise exploit a person for the purpose of forced labor, slavery, debt bondage, peonage, that kind of thing.
Peonage is where people work off a debt with labor. Congress outlawed the practice in 1867, but it's reportedly going on now in Alabama. Those fighting traffickers know the best way to stop the process is to take away their means of carrying out their practice. The state of Alabama has a new tool that helps in this effort, as well as offering another way to help the victims.
It's not too far akin to what we see in the forfeiture side for criminal cases.
That is Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall. His office came up with a new law that's designed to fight traffickers and help victims at the same time by giving state prosecutors a specific power.
To allow us in a civil setting to seek very immediate relief through a temporary restraining order and then subsequently a preliminary injunction when we are aware of a business that it either has been, is, or will be engaged in human trafficking.
We continue to follow breaking news at this hour in West Huntsville. Federal law enforcement agents just wrapped up a search at the health massage parlor that's off University.
Before, prosecutors could only charge traffickers with a crime. Now the victims can hit massage business owners in their wallets. Marshall says the cases in Huntsville are the first time the state has been able to use the new law.
It's a wonderful tool for us to then not only seek that immediate relief, shut down a business or businesses that we believe are engaged in this effort, and then allow the civil courts to be able to allow that case to continue.
Liz, deputies and federal law enforcement agents were going in and out of this health massage parlor right behind me just about a few hours
ago. For APR News, I'm Stan Ingold in Montgomery.